listen to the best of the church's music for the Advent season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Advent season, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
God. Dear Father in heaven, I'm not a praying man, but if you're up there and you can hear me, show me the way. I'm at the end of my rope, right? Show me the way, oh God.
That's Jimmy Stewart. Famous scene from the Christmas movie It's a Wonderful Life. There he is praying. Well, the movie has a deeply spiritual context. It is a classic, and believe it or not, it is 70 years old this year. Is a religion angle on the movie, the Christmas movie, now really a tradition of Christmas for many, as traditional as the Christmas tree and presents under the tree. It's a Wonderful Life. Joining us to talk about the 70th anniversary of the Christmas movie It's a Wonderful Life, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Glad to be here.
How do you explain that this has become a genuine, bona fide Christmas time tradition, It's a Wonderful Life, as well as having staying power of 70 years now?
Well, first of all, there's kind of a technical reason why it became a classic, and that was it was old enough, and I forget exactly what the licensing issue was, but there was a time in the life of this film when just about anybody could show it anytime they wanted it. The usage rights were so unlimited. And so the movie, you're probably too young to remember this, but in the early days of cable, this movie would just come on over and over and over during the American shopping mall Christmas, you know, beginning in late November, you know, and going all the way until Christmas Day. So to some degree, it was just a part of the background noise of the season. So you have that. But then you get into the actual qualities of the film itself, and I think it's important to emphasize that people love this movie for radically different reasons, and I think that's a part of its importance. There are people who basically, when they think of It's a Wonderful Life, literally all they think about is the final 20 to 30 minutes of this movie. For these people, Clarence, the guardian angel, is almost as important a character as George Bailey, the kind of redemptive, sacrificial everyman who is the heart of the film. And if you only watch the last 20 or so minutes of this movie, you get a lot of really good vibes and maybe a tiny little tear in your eye. But the main thing you get is a movie that's real cute. To some degree, the scary scene where George Bailey, of course, having wished that he'd never been born, and the angel, the almost angel Clarence, comes to show him what the world would be like if he hadn't been born, and you have all these tragic visions, to some degree, the darkness of those moments, like him knocking on the front door of the home in which he grew up, and his mother doesn't even know who he is. Discovering that his brother died because he wasn't there to save his brother when he died in his childhood, and thus because his brother died as a child, there was nobody to save all those men during the war, you know, the heroic act of bravery in which his brother saved so many men. You have that cascading effect. But if you just watch the last 20 minutes, that darkness doesn't make any sense. Whereas if you watch the whole movie, it's a pretty bleak movie at times. Which brings us one step further. When the movie first came out, it was pretty much a flop. And the reason it was a flop was that everybody thought it was too dark. Now, when people talk about It's a Wonderful Life as some sort of cheerful, jolly, little Christmas trinket, when they talk about the last 20 minutes, it doesn't make any sense to think of it as being too dark. At the same time, and I hope this isn't getting too complex, but popular culture has layers. To some degree, the fact that so many ordinary Americans love it for the wrong reason, just those last moments, and the fact that even when it came out, Frank Capra's reputation was as such a clean, squeaky clean, wholesome director, this movie has long been fiercely hated by some of the most powerful forces in American cultural criticism. So it's a movie people love for good reasons. It's a movie people love for kind of shallow reasons. And it's also a movie that people hate. Now, you put that all together, and you've got a movie with legs. This thing is going to stay around.
So, 70th anniversary of the film
yeah.
is this year. And if you are a journalist and you are assigned to write the piece on the 70th anniversary of It's a Wonderful Life, the Christmas classic, where do you begin?
Well, I mean, you could just treat it as an event, and you could go to Seneca Falls, New York, the town, that kind of the look, shape, and location of the town was the template for Frank Capra's vision of Bedford Falls. You could just do the event story itself. You could just go there and ask all these people what they think. But you also have the It's a Wonderful Life Museum is there. If I was going to do this story, however, I would actually talk to Leonard Maltin and other great kind of students of film at the popular level. And I would also try to talk to Frank Capra's family, because I think to some degree, the fact that this is the star on the top of the career of a great director, and by the way, let me emphasize, because I'd like to talk about this, a great Catholic director. You could go to his family and ask what the movie meant to him, you know, in terms of how he talked about it with them. And he especially loved, late in his life, getting to see the film come to be appreciated, whereas early on, he just basically could only thumb his nose at Hollywood and say, well, I think this is the greatest film I've ever made. I don't care what you think.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about the 70th anniversary of the Christmas movie It's a Wonderful Life on this Thursday, December the 1st. When we come back, it's got, well, it's not explicitly Christian, but it does have Clarence, some angels in there. Stay tuned.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Hi, this is Pastor Clayton from Zion Lutheran Church of Muscoota, Illinois, a proud supporter of Issues, Etc. Zion is a congregation firmly grounded in God's grace given in the Word and Sacraments, where we treasure the timeless beauty of the liturgy. Zion is also a vibrant, young, family-friendly congregation where you would be warmly welcomed. Zion is located at 101 South Railway Street in Muscoota, Illinois, and we would love to share God's gifts of grace with you. For more information, please visit our website at zionmuscoota.com.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
sounds like Advent to me. Choir of St. Paul Cathedral with the Advent hymn, Lo, He Comes with Clouds Descending, playing right now at our 24/7 sacred music station, LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org. You can listen 24/7 for free at LutheranPublicRadio.org and on the LPR mobile app. Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the Advent season. We're talking about the 70th anniversary of the Christmas movie, It's a Wonderful Life. Terry Mattingly is our guest, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and of the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of GetReligion.org as well. Terry, let's talk about the religion angle on this movie. It's not, some might say, the message isn't overtly Christian, but it does have Clarence the Angel.
Well, my friend, let me stomp you down here for a second. Let's forget Clarence for a moment. I mean, Clarence is this whole kind of thing that people, when they die, become angels, whereas the traditional Catholic view was people who die have the potential to become saints. I mean, but the very first moments of this film are in many ways the most important, because what you have here is a number of different people on their knees praying for George Bailey. Now, you also have an explicitly Catholic invocation of the intercession of the saints, whereas then you have other people who are simply praying, you know, for God to intervene. So you have both explicitly Catholic prayer and you have just kind of a generic American Christian prayer. But the movie opens with heaven being beseeched for action to save this man, George Bailey. And what I think is so poignant about it is that at the end of the movie, George Bailey, on that bridge when he is thinking of committing suicide, George Bailey wonders if he's had a wonderful life, whereas everyone in the town has already, in the first seconds of the film, already been telling God, this man has had a wonderful life. And he's wonderful to us. He's crucial to us. He's life and death to us. So to some degree, the entire movie of him doubting the purpose of his life, him doubting the importance of his life and the worthiness of his life and all the dreams he gave up, whereas we already know in the very first frames of the film that he is wrong, wrong, wrong about doubting any of this. I would also note that there are several moments in the film that are explicitly Catholic. Probably the best one, the best known one, is at the scene when they're dedicating one of the homes that they have built to help people get out of the horrible slums owned by Henry F. Potter. And by the way, had you ever noticed what those slums are named until I mentioned it in my column?
No, refresh my memory.
Potter's Field.
Huh.
Now put on your biblical thinking cap here.
See, I would have told you Pottersville, but it's Potter's Field.
It's Potter's Field is the name of the division. Pottersville is the name of the town in the vision if George hadn't lived. The whole town has become Pottersville. Bedford Falls is gone. It's been swallowed by Potter. But the name of his slums is Potter's Field. And so you have a place where people who have no money and no luck and are down on their lot have all been cast into the Potter's Field, which, of course, is a reference, an explicit reference, to St. Matthew's Gospel and to Judas throwing down the 30 pieces of silver, and the religious authorities of his day use it to purchase a place to bury him and other strangers, which becomes the Potter's Field and the Field of Blood, one of the most infamous locations and terms in New Testament thought. So do you think that was a coincidence that Capra puts that into the movie?
I would doubt that.
I would doubt that very much. So back to the dedication for one of the houses, one of these lovely little houses that they're building to help people escape the Potter's Field. And, you know, we're there on the front porch. The only thing, literally the only thing missing in that scene is a priest, because what we have there is bread, salt, and wine, the three things that would be part of the ritual of a house blessing in the Catholic Church. And so why isn't there a priest there? Well, simply because Capra wanted to leave his film in the world of the universal. He didn't want to explicitly get it labeled Bells of St. Mary's, although if you've ever noticed, when Jimmy Stewart walks past the local theater in Bedford Falls, what's the movie that's playing in the theater in Bedford Falls? The Bells of St. Mary's. You know, another one of the most famous religious films ever made in the history of Hollywood. So Capra, who was raised in a deeply Catholic Italian family, has put himself into this movie in terms of his own worldview. In fact, there's one other little interesting point that I'd never had noticed until it was noted for me by the Catholic film critic and Catholic clergyman. He's a permanent deacon, Stephen DeGraydonis of DecentFilms.com, someone, a wonderful source for people to look up his work and his input on film. He noted that for some reason, at that ceremony, when they move all their things to this new house, they have very prominently photographed in that scene is a goat. And you go, okay, what's the goat doing there, other than they're so poor that they need goat's milk? Well, what is the Italian word for goat? Capra is the Italian word for goat. So Frank Capra has literally said, hint, hint, I'm here. I'm in this scene. This is my family. The Martinis, very Italian name, the Martinis represent my family. This is my story. I'm also in this movie, even in that kind of a symbolic and explicit way. Just lovely stuff all the way through it.
Is the 70th anniversary of the film, does it have a news angle?
Well, I think when you're dealing with one of the most popular films in the history of American life, and the greatest performance of Jimmy Stewart, who I think it says a lot about Jimmy Stewart that people keep calling Tom Hanks the new Jimmy Stewart. I mean, which lets you know what Jimmy Stewart meant, you know, all of those years. Also, what Jimmy Stewart meant to the World War II generation. And to some degrees, this film has become kind of a living symbol of the sacrifices that generation was willing to make for family and for community and whatever, which leads to one other story that I think some people could link in here if they really wished. Years ago, I was thinking about doing a book about the message of It's a Wonderful Life, the religious worldview of It's a Wonderful Life, and linking it to what some people have called the It's a Wonderful Life of the baby boomer generation, which is the movie Field of Dreams, which is another movie with a lot of kind of spiritual impact, but not a lot of even less explicit symbolism. So in the midst of working on that concept, I went out to Hollywood, and I interviewed Phil Alden Robinson, the director of Field of Dreams, and I mentioned this to him, and he laughed really big, and he said, well, can you imagine how many people would make that connection? He said, and that's a connection he himself had thought of. He said, imagine how many people would have made that connection if I had got my first casting choice. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, the character Moonlight Graham, Doc Graham, the elderly doctor who has sacrificed his whole life, wanted to be a baseball player, but instead became the doctor who helped save a small town. He said, I cast Jimmy Stewart to play Moonlight Graham, but Jimmy got sick at the last moment and Burt Lancaster had to step in. And he said, Lancaster did a wonderful job, but can you imagine how much more symbolic the movie Field of Dreams would have been if that elderly character who's lived his whole life in sacrifice and at the end makes another sacrificial act against his dreams, if that character had been Jimmy Stewart? That would have linked that movie even more explicitly on in, you know, for the generations. I can't say too much about how symbolic It's a Wonderful Life is, both to that generation, and I hope now that NBC has decided, NBC, I believe, purchased the exclusive rights to broadcast this film I mean, other than like, you know, Turner Classic Movies or something, it's going to be on NBC twice. They're doing it on December the 10th, which is coming up, and that's the weekend of the 70th anniversary. The premiere was like on the 10th, and then the movie itself came out on, maybe the premiere was on the 20th. But anyway, it's really close, and then the movie itself was released on Christmas Eve 70 years ago. So it's going to be aired on December 10 and then aired again on Christmas Eve, as I would say, as God intended. But anyway, I know I'm rambling here for a second, but I hope people can hear that there's a lot in this film, but you need to sit and watch the whole movie. Don't settle for the laughter and the cheers and the cuteness of the symbolic moment at the end without watching the whole movie and getting the symbolism of what the movie actually meant.
Well, that's my big question here, Terry. So again, you're the journalist writing this story, and your editor says, in addition to the fact that the thing's 70 years old, it's a cultural and Christmas icon, what is the movie's message?
Well, I mean, Capra gives us some explicit content. And I put some of that in the column that I wrote this week about it. Listen to this quote. I love this, and there are many more like it in his autobiography. There's like a whole page where he responds to the critics of the movie. He said, it's a film that is said to the downtrodden, the pushed around, the pauper, heads up fella. A film that expressed its love for the homeless and the loveless, for those whose cross is heavy, for her whose cross is heavy, and him whose touch is ashes, for the Magdalene stoned by hypocrites, and the afflicted Lazaruses with only dogs to lick their sores. That's pretty religious language right there. Then you contrast his view of the film with a 2008 Times essay. This is the New York Times, which means the movie is still important enough that they're writing lengthy essays attacking it in 2008, a film critic. He called it a terrifying, asphyxiating story about growing up and relinquishing your dreams, of being trapped, of compromising, of watching others move ahead in a way, of becoming so filled with rage that you verbally abuse your children, your teacher, and your oppressively perfect wife. This movie can stir up that much anger and bitterness in elite critics 6 decades after it's released? That's amazing stuff. I mean, obviously this is more than a movie. So you could, like I said, if you interview Capra's family and you talk to some critics, you can do a story about the fact that it's more than a movie and that we've hit the symbolic anniversary. Or, like I said, you can do the lighter story, which is you just go cover the event itself, all the people who gather in Seneca Falls to mark the 70th anniversary. It'd be very interesting. Hey, what if the Capra family shows up? I wouldn't be at all surprised if they had maybe children from the original cast who are still alive. I wouldn't be at all surprised if there were not people linked to the film at that event. That would give you a very easy starting point. And I'll be shocked if there aren't stories of that kind in the mainstream press.
Terry, finally, with about a minute here, Frank Capra famously talked about film as one of the three universal languages, the others being, I think he said, mathematics and music. From kind of the pop culture's critic seat, what do you think about that observation, especially with respect to this film?
Well, I would go one further. Capra said that movie makers should never ever forget, in his words, that we have been granted the privilege of preaching to people for 2 hours in the dark. That's kind of a fitting image of what he thought he was doing. He thought he was putting moral stories and worldview, and even though he didn't want his films to be preachy, he was well aware that he was conveying messages that counted, and he called that preaching to people for 2 hours in the dark, which I think is pretty gripping.
Terry Mattingly, a senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
Folks, if you appreciate our weekly interviews with Terry Mattingly, please consider making a year-end tax-deductible contribution. With 5 weeks left in 2016, we're about $105,000 short of our yearly expenses. Make a financial gift by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. Send it to Issues Etc. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Here's the address again. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a year-end tax-deductible contribution at issuesetc.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping us in mind when you consider your year-end giving. Christ in the Old Testament is coming up next. Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will join us to talk about Give the King Your Justice, that phrase from Psalm 72, which he says is packed with all kinds of Christology. We'll find out how after this.
If you're like me, you remember when education was about the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and history that gave our kids models of what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum is bringing this kind of education back. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Folks, we have 5 weeks left in 2016, and we need $105,000 to cover our expenses for the year. Please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift to support this worldwide outreach. You can contribute by check, make your check payable to Issues Etc., and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of us at the end of 2016.
We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Christmas is a holy day, not just an ordinary holiday. It's when we celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ, our Savior. That's why Emmanuel Press keeps Jesus as the focus of all their Christmas cards. And that's why they use the words of Scripture and the poetry of hymns inside the cards to confess our hope in Christ. Visit their website at emmanuelpress.us to see a variety of cards, including a brand new card for 2016. EmmanuelPress.us.